Today's the 19th, isn't it?
Good evening, everyone. This is Dolores Cannon with the Metaphysical Hour. And this is live tonight. Tonight is October the 19th in the year 2012. And I've got to say that because you've been listening to recorded shows for the last 3 months. We've been out of the country. We've been traveling all over Europe for the last 3 months, from July until now in October. And I've made up my mind I don't think I'm ever going to do 3 months in a row again. There was a lot going on, but that's a long time to be gone all at once. So tonight, me and Julia are going to talk about what happened during the trip, and we were in 7 different countries, so all over Europe. I've got a little scratchy throat. That's from the changing in the climate, the air. Everything is different. Mm-hmm. When we left here in July, we were having record temperatures of 105 degrees here in Arkansas. I think the whole middle of the United States was baking at that time. Right. And we knew when we got back that it would be fall and everything would be different. But the way we had that drought, I didn't think there was going to be any leaves to turn, but they are doing it. Mm-hmm. So we're back now, and it is a big change. Pardon me. Okay. But everything is a change. Okay, let me give out the toll-free number in case anyone wants to call in tonight, because starting next week, we're going to be on the road again. And, but, you know, we do as much as we can while we're here live. And Don informed me he has a huge backlog of my old shows, so he just pulls them out of the records. And that way, I'm not really gone. You're just hearing the older shows. I told him also, while I was in Italy or England, I did a show with Patricia Corey, who was also on BBS. And she lives over there. So
I think you were in Poland.
I was in some country over there, yeah, but she's in Europe also. And so they hooked us up with BBS. And when we went on the air, I was telling everybody, I really am in Europe. I'm not playing hooky. I'm just appearing on her show, but I'm not playing hooky. I really was gone those whole 3 months. A little headache. Let me give out.
BBSradio.com. It's not mainstream. It could be here. Information and knowledge. Bringing humanity closer to truth. BBSradio.com.
Okay, guys, they just pulled the plug for a few minutes because the little gremlins were playing with the phone lines again. It makes a lot of static. We wonder sometimes when we do this whether it's our combined energy that's interfering with the lines, which has happened before. Mm-hmm. But anyway, we're back on again. Let me give out the toll-free number again because I think it was being blocked by the static. 1-888-627-6008. And we are going to be talking about the trip and all the countries we visited and all the things we saw in those 3 months. But if anyone wants to call in, that's perfectly okay. We got a lot of ground to cover.
We covered a lot of ground.
We did. We had no idea where we were after a while. But we were in 7 countries, and I did 7 classes. 3 of them was with translators.
Yeah.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. But the last time we were on the air, the next week, we had our conference here in Arkansas, which seems like a long time ago now. But that was another fantastic one. It was just fine. We had Arun Gandhi, the grandson of Mahatma Gandhi, was there, and D. Wallace, and we had a fantastic crowd, and it was really good. But then we went immediately into one of my classes here in Arkansas. And this is the largest one that we've had done in the United States. It was over 100 people in that one class.
Right.
We also had a level 2. But we're getting ready to do another one next week in Arkansas, which will also be over 100 people.
Right.
That's why we can't be on live next week.
Right. Mm-hmm.
But I do want to say something before I forget. We are having such fantastic results with these classes. We have changed the format now, and instead of 3-day classes, they're 5 days, and we are producing much stronger practitioners that are really able to do the job. And I think this is one of the reasons why.
Right.
And I want to talk about one man, and we have a lot of doctors take our classes. And this is one that took the level 2 in July.
Mm-hmm.
But he had already taken level 1 just in February in L.A., which was only a few months before. But he told us something that I think is really groundbreaking, in that what was from February to July, not even 4 months, I think, in there.
It would be 5 months.
5 months, he had already been done over 22 cases. And he was having fantastic results with every major illness. He was working with people with all kinds of cancer, diabetes. He was focusing on the most seriously ill. And he works at a hospital. And the amazing thing is, well, he was having cures, fantastic cures. The amazing thing is that the hospital didn't care what he was doing. He was working with the hospital. And they said, well, we don't care what you're doing. As long as it's working, just go ahead and keep it up. And he said they are validating what he's doing. They are checking the patient before he does the session to make sure they really did have the disease, the illness, and then checking them after he has the session to show they are really cured. And like Julie, you said, this is groundbreaking.
It's a huge advancement. I'm not sure. I mean, it is a huge, huge step.
Mm-hmm.
Now, not to be a conspiracy person, but it's like, I don't know that we want that attention necessarily, because sometimes we've been flying under the radar. It's been really, really good. This might bring us up into the radar, which isn't necessarily what we want.
No, but it's
but
giving.
I'm sure that you're protected all the time, and the timing of it is sure is fine, I'm sure. So
I'm talking about that will give us validation for the work we're doing.
Yes, I know, but with that comes other things, is what I'm saying.
Okay, but it's fantastic that he is getting such wonderful results, and they are validating it. That's the important thing.
Mm-hmm.
So we did the class with over 100 people, and we're having, even in just the practice sessions, they are having fantastic results. Anyway, as soon as we got done with that, that was the end of July, we head for Europe. And the first country was Poland.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, all I knew about Poland, we went to Warsaw, was about the war, the Second World War. And so we had questions about all of that. We had a translator there. But in Warsaw, they told us that 90% of the country had been destroyed by the war, and they had to do a tremendous amount of rebuilding. And it was fine now. It was a beautiful city, and that's all we saw was the city. But if most of you know about the history of the World War II, it was Auschwitz is the one they said, wasn't it? The death camp was located there. So there was a lot of terrible things that went on in Poland. And then after the Germans, the Russians took them over, and which wasn't much better. They came in because they didn't have any defense. But now it seems like everything is fine. Beautiful city, and the people all seem prosperous. They seem like they're really happy, and they enjoyed the class. I don't remember how many we had in all these classes now, but it's been so long. But one on top of the other, it gets a little hard to remember. But then from there, we went to Finland. Now, Finland, I've never been there before either. And there was easier because most of the people spoke English. We didn't need a translator. But the man who was driving us around, who had arranged everything for us, was telling us some interesting things. And Finland, of course, wasn't involved in the war, so they were spared all of that. But he said, there are no homeless, there's no unemployment, and that it's just this, everybody has everything they need. He said, there's no crime, because he said, how can you have crime when everybody has everything they need? Mm-hmm. Which is a little strange concept for us to think about. But He works with immigration there. We were in Helsinki, and he says he has people from other countries that come there to visit. And he was showing this one man around who had come from, I think he said, one of the Asian countries.
Philippines, I think.
And the man, as he was driving him around Helsinki, the man said, I know it's all very nice, but I want you to show me the slums. Show me the bad parts of town. And he said, well, that's going to be a little hard to do because we don't have any slums. We don't have any bad parts. So isn't that amazing to think of a city, and it was a beautiful city, mm-hmm. to not have any crime, not have any homeless, not have any unemployment. So it could be done.
Right. Don't know how they did it, but yeah.
No, they didn't have a queen, did they? I know they had a president.
I think so.
Women in Sweden and Norway, they have queens and kings. Mm-hmm. Seems like most of the Slavic countries we've gone to, they're like that. They don't have crime and they don't have homeless. They take care of everybody. Mm-hmm. Everybody has a place to live. So they must be doing something right over there. Anyway, it was Helsinki. No translator. You're going to have to help me out because I'm trying to remember as we go along. Then we went back to England. And
no, we went to Oberstdorf.
We went to Germany first before going back to England. Mm-hmm. Yeah, we went on to Germany. First we stopped in Munich and had a lecture there. Then we went to where I know was paradise. I said, when we got there, I finally found paradise. I never seen such a beautiful place in my whole life. Everybody's always asking us, what is the most beautiful places you've ever seen? Well, it was 2 hours south of Munich. We had to go by train, and we had the class there. And it was a little village, a little town called Oberstdorf, and it was right in the Bavarian Alps. Right on the border of where you leave Germany and go into Austria, the Bavarian Alps, and it was so beautiful. Everybody later who came for the class said, how in the world did you find this place? That it was so beautiful.
Well, and it was something that tourists don't know about. It's local people know about it. It's not something that they advertise out in the world at large, so the Germans know about it, but not anybody else.
But it was right in the mountains, and it was beautiful. They didn't have snow on them right now.
Right then.
Yeah, right then. But we flew back, mm-hmm. he was flying over the Alps, and they were snow on them then, so it was beginning to come. Mm-hmm. But they said at Oberstdorf is the best skiing in all of Germany. Mm-hmm. That's where most people come. The tourists come there for the ski season. So there wasn't a whole lot of people when we were there.
No.
But I know we was in this beautiful hotel, walked out on the balcony, and here was this beautiful landscape of all of these mountains. And there was we were on top of a hill, and down in the valley between us and the mountains on the other side was this little village, and there was a church down there. And every hour, it was tolling. You said even more than every hour.
Yeah, it was doing every quarter hour. It was
tolling
the
bell.
Quarters, but then on the hour, it would do the number.
But it was just, I've never felt such peace and beauty anywhere.
Well, in that village, they were all wearing patriotic, you know, their
Bavarian
costumes. Yeah, uh-huh. It's like you step back in time.
Mm-hmm. It was like you went back into time to a more peaceful time, a more beautiful time. But even when we were in Warsaw, in the old town, mm-hmm. that was peaceful too and beautiful.
Right.
Of course, that had all been rebuilt,
mm-hmm.
but they rebuilt it exactly the way it was. And I felt a great peace there around this big church. It was right in the square. But Oberstdorf was the same way. They had everybody wearing the costumes, and it was just a lovely atmosphere, very beautiful. I don't know if we're going to go back there again, but I highly recommend it.
Yeah, you might for a vacation.
When do I get a vacation?
Mm-hmm.
My vacations are always working vacations. But maybe it was so beautiful and peaceful because I don't think the war got that far south. I don't remember it getting in there. It may have. But I want to remind you of the sound, Sound of Music.
Right. Well, if they did get that, I don't believe they got that far south because that'd been too much trouble to go over those mountains.
But, it was the same feeling as the movie, Sound of Music. Pardon me. Another day or so, this will all be gone out of my throat. But we really enjoyed our time there, and everybody wanted to know how we found it. Well, it was people in our England office that discovered it, and they're the ones that made the reservations for it. But then we took the two-hour train ride back, got into Munich train station to get over to the airport, and we were back in chaos again. From peace and beauty into chaos. But then we went back to England, and do we have the conference first there before we had the
yes,
class?
We did. Mm-hmm.
This is our first time. We have had our transformation conference in England, and we're going to make an annual affair out of it now. We hope. We don't really know what's going on, but this is the first time, and we had it in London. And we brought Arun Gandhi over,
mm-hmm.
and we had Guy Needler and a lot of our other authors that were they live in England. We had them there, but it was smaller than we wanted to be in attendance, but otherwise it was a really good conference.
Right, it was.
Very well received. So that's always the way it is when you do one something for the first time. Also, we had competition. There was another conference that was going on, and at the hotel we were having it at was the Paralympics.
No, a lot of people that were in the Paralympics were staying there. The Paralympics were going on that weekend.
Yeah.
That was their comment. It wasn't that they were going on in that hotel. They were going on, period.
That's what I mean.
So
they
all of London was stopping for those events.
Yeah, they had just gone through the Olympics, and we missed that. We weren't caught up in the traffic with that. But then we get into the Paralympics, and the hotel was packed. So we were competing against that in London as well as this other conference. So I think that's probably what it was. Otherwise, it was a really good conference.
Mm-hmm.
And we're going to do it again in 2013. We got a lot going on in 2013. People say, when are you going to stay home? We've talked about slowing down, but it doesn't seem like it. We just keep going and going. But after that, then I had we had our class in England, out of Farringdon.
Right.
Which is another big one that we have every year. But now we think we're going to have to move it from Farringdon because every bed and breakfast hotel in the whole town was completely booked. And people from our class were trying to find a place to stay. So I'm trying to remember what all happened. It's just one thing after the other.
Right.
But then we went on to Rome after that, and we had a class there. That was translators. That was one of the smaller ones. But there was a lot of people there that spoke English. But they said if we even had one person in the class that couldn't speak English, we thought we should have a translator. And what were they telling us? That they didn't think metaphysical things would go in Rome.
Well, they just, but most of the people that were there were not from Rome.
Yeah, so we found that out.
Yeah, so it's like, yeah, they just, we were told that they probably wouldn't be real receptive there. Well, they, you know, probably not. I don't know that we had, I'm trying to think if we had any, but yeah, we did have some people there from Rome,
okay.
But not very many.
Anyway, we after all of that, then we went on the cruise, the 11-day cruise of the Mediterranean. And that was really interesting. We had about 70, I think, people of our group
mm-hmm.
that
right.
were on the cruise. And a lot of the people that came, well, not a lot, I'm trying to think how big the group was, 20 or more, came from the Chinese class
mm-hmm.
that I had in March in Shanghai. And they all came as a group. So we had to have our Chinese translator come to be there for them and help them. But oh, they all enjoyed the cruise. It was really nice. But we went to Athens again. And, you know, it's amazing, I was looking at that, the Parthenon. Because here it is. The most beautiful, perfect building in the world. That's what they've called it. Because according to the mathematics, it is absolutely perfect. And yet it was built way, way back in the Grecian times. Of course, you know, the Grecians are the ones who invented most of the science we have today. Mathematics would have been one of them. But it's so precise that most of the other government buildings have been patterned off of it down through history. But they are reconstructing it. They've been reconstructing it for a long time, taking the old stones that fell off and trying to put them back on. But there were scaffolding all around the Parthenon and huge cranes.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what to me is impressive. They're lifting these huge stones to rebuild the Parthenon, reconstruct it, and they got to use cranes. Now, how was that built in the first place? They didn't have cranes in those days.
How do we know?
Well, according to science, they don't. So that's one of the things that I was thinking about. How could they have lifted those huge blocks? I was thinking more of E.T. help.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But this made it kind of drove it home a little more than I thought before because of seeing the big cranes
right.
trying to raise the stones. It was a lot of work, too. But, no, you were more attracted to the other temple that was sitting next to it.
Yeah, it was right across from it. It was next to it or across from it, however you want to look at it. But it had all these women on it. And I didn't really understand what it was. They didn't really explain it. But I just kept being attracted to that building. You know, the Parthenon was nice, but it's like it's just a building that's in disrepair. I mean, it's in pieces, you know. Yeah, it's ruined. This other one had all these women around it, and that just kept attracting me. So I kept taking pictures of it. And then we came out, that's when you were saying that that was the temple of the goddesses, priestesses, or something like that.
The priestesses that took care of everything.
Right.
Because the pillars of that temple were women.
Right.
Statues of women.
Yes.
Instead of pillars.
Seven women.
Like those were probably the priestesses that took care of the Athena and all the temple. But the smaller temple.
Right.
But you said that was more attractive to you.
Well, that got my attention. I didn't know what it was, but it just kept getting my attention.
So who knows?
Who knows?
Because I know I was at the Parthenon. I've written about that in a past life. I remember bits and pieces of that. But you may have been in the other part.
Maybe.
The other part, if the Parthenon didn't attract you.
No, it really didn't. But that building, I went all the way around and took all these pictures of it. So.
Okay. But there's a lot of walking on these tours.
Well, that one, what was, I don't know what the word to use, and there's so many people. There were so many people. And, I mean, that's good for them and their economy, but it's really hard to see anything. I mean, you're going up the steps through the Parthenon, I mean, the first steps, go up to the whole landing where everything is. And I mean, it's completely,
it's completely
covered with people, and you get up, you're going the part way. I mean, you have to rummage through people just to climb the steps. And it was like, it's just too many people, and they weren't trying to make it, you know, where it was. I mean, that was good for them. They've been hurting, you know.
Greece has been hurting economically.
So they want people, and I mean, there were school groups there and everything. There's little children and everything, but it's just there were so many people. And here, when we had been in these places of, I mean, everything was just so peaceful and quiet. And then we get pushed in with all these people. It was hard. The energies were hard. So,
well, that's like when we were in Rome before we went on the cruise. We took a bus ride around. We were there a year ago and got to see a lot. But we just want to take a bus ride around and went by the Vatican. It's the same way. It's all crowds of people.
Well, it's funny because all I could hear some part of me saying as we're driving around, it's just a big city. Now, I mean no disrespect.
Some people love Rome.
They love Rome. They love cities. They love. It's not to say that there's anything wrong with it, but all that just kept coming to me was, it's a big city, and what's the point? And it was like, I mean, it was really strange. I don't know where this was coming from, you know, but it was like, what's the point? It's just people, a bunch of people. I mean, when you're driving, and there's all these apartments, and it's like people are all stacked. I think that's where it was like saying, what's the point? What?
Yeah, we found that in most big cities in Europe, they don't have houses. They're all stacked up in these apartments.
And very crowded. Fact. I mean, they're really tight and a lot of people in a very small area. So,
mm-hmm.
I like the country.
Yeah, that's why I'm so glad to get back here where there's nothing. We had deer out here in front of the house before we started the show because we're in the middle of nowhere out here. But yeah, I've always wanted to see the Colosseum. You go by the Colosseum, and all it is a ruin in the middle of a huge city.
And they're beautiful. And it really is. I mean, it's like, okay, it's like they're, I don't know, this is just, I think, the part that's starting to disassociate. You know, we're so long, we stay a part of everything, and it's all these things we want to see and we want to know. And then, like I said, then that part's going, what's the point? But it was like looking at these things, and it's almost a homage to the way things used to be. It's just saying, okay, this is what you used to have. But and I appreciate that because they're massive, they're beautifully constructed buildings.
And I'm glad that they have preserved them.
Mm-hmm. Right.
Many of them were partly destroyed by earthquakes and wars,
right.
But they have preserved. That's the more important thing.
But really, that's what it is. It's just this is the way it used to be, and. You know, which I guess any museum is, and any old building. But see, that's what my myself was doing. It was doing a lot of that of why, what, you know, it just, it wasn't making a lot of sense, which, and like I said, I don't mean any disrespect. It was just, I think I was going through something, you know, and it was pulling, it was just associating with things.
Well, it's like, I would have loved to have seen it the way it was in those days,
mm-hmm.
before huge cities were built up. When we've gone to these ruins and things, that, but it's not the same anymore. And I wrote it in one of my books after we came back mm-hmm. last year about it, like, it, that's what's disappointing, is that it, the real thing isn't there anymore.
Yeah.
Seems like the only way you can have the real thing is just to regress people in past mm-hmm. lives to when they were there,
right.
and living lives when it was grand and beautiful.
Well, that was like when I was in Egypt, and the person that was taking me around, when he made a comment, that brought that to home, when he made a comment, it's like, what do you think would be, if we could just get rid of all the sand, you know, then we could see what's here. What do you think was there? It's like, it was probably a huge city there.
Yeah.
You know, it's just buried. But that, and that's just it. It's like, that's when you start to seeing the rest of it. And, yeah, it's just, everything just keeps getting buried and trapped and... Yeah, and everything that we have now may go through that too. I mean, it may all get buried and stuff, and other people will, oh, I wonder what they were doing. I wonder what they, you know, here are all these big cities, and it's just cities on top of cities. And
looks like we were driving around Rome and in Athens also. They're still doing excavating, and it's like another story or so down below the street level.
Absolutely, it's cities on top of cities.
They're digging up the ruins of old cities.
Mm-hmm.
Where was that? There was another place. It was one of the Greek Isles where they had uncovering, right next to the port where the ship was.
Right.
And they were uncovering tiled floors and everything.
I think that might have been Rhodes.
Yep. Mm-hmm. It could be. I think it was on the Isle of Rhodes.
Mm-hmm.
And you could see what it used to be like.
Right, because that's where they would have had all the other stuff. So I'm sure it was Rhodes.
But it's like everything is down further. I had a friend that lived in Athens. She said, every time you dig anywhere in Athens, you're going to find ruins, find artifacts. And he said where she lived in the city, you couldn't even go out and dig in your garden without finding something. So you just didn't tell anybody. Otherwise, they got to stop everything, and they've got to find out what it is and do the archaeological thing. So it's just Athens, Rome, they're just built on top of other cities.
I don't know. Do we do that over here in the United States?
We haven't been around that long.
Probably not. I mean, we don't have those layers like
because
that. So
the United States isn't that old.
Well, it's older than we think it is. But
oh, yeah, but I mean, not like that. It goes back thousands
where they
of have years.
Cities and things.
Mm-hmm.
They just keep going up. Like, at what point did something that was there nothing, and then they had to build something on top of it? See, it's like...
Well, a lot of it could have been earthquakes or wars or volcanic eruptions.
Right.
That bury it, and then people leave for a while, and they come back. It's all covered, and so they start building again. Mexico has that. They have layers of other cities on top of cities.
Well, let's see if they have it. We probably have it.
Except we're not that old.
Where's old
we're a young
Mexico.
Country.
But Mexico, I mean, we've all been here. So who's to say?
Anyway... But that's when I kept thinking at the Parthenon, here they're reconstructing with cranes, and they had UFOs lifting those blocks. I don't know how they did it in those days.
Or the same way they did the pyramids, you know, with sound. And
yeah. Now, that's what I mean. It has to be done some other way.
Right.
We haven't caught up with that way yet. But then we went to Turkey. How do you pronounce that? Ephesus?
Ephesus. Mm-hmm.
And Ephesus, they said this was a new port that had just been built for the touristy cruise ships to come in.
Right, this is something new to bring tourism into that city.
Mm-hmm. So they wanted the trade, and this is a new port.
Right.
And we were there, they said we were going to be about the last cruise line for the year. And this was what, the beginning of October? It was October, yeah.
Yeah, it was October. It was the 5th and the 15th. It was been about the middle of it, probably. No, it was toward the beginning, so it was about the 7th or 8th.
Because they said at this time of the year, the seas get really bad. They have high winds and rough seas, and so the ships can't make it into the port. That's one of the reasons they don't usually go and dock in those areas.
Mm-hmm.
So only a few months out of the year can those people have tourist trade. But they took us on a tour around the whole city. They showed us one place that I have question marks about it. It's one of the highest points in outside
right.
of Ephesus. Was supposed to be the house of Mother Mary. And they said she came there with John. He brought her there after the crucifixion, and this was a house she was supposed to have lived in. And it was way up, real high. It took a long time to
right.
get up there with the bus we were on.
It had a beautiful view.
They said they took her there to keep away from the Romans and all the trouble that was going on after the crucifixion. But I have questions about that story because that's different than what I've found in my research. But then when they were telling us about it, the tour guide, he said it was all a vision of a nun.
Yeah, absolutely. No scientific. It's just that when they went and looked at this place that she saw, there was a house there, but it was only a foundation. I mean, it was just only a base. It wasn't, and then they went from there.
So they'd been destroyed so many
right.
thousands of years ago.
Right, so I guess if it was, since there was something there, and she saw it and didn't know about it, then that must mean it's real. But that's what it's based on.
But I was surprised because I thought the Catholic Church, didn't go along with visions and seeing the future and seeing things like that in psychic visions.
Yeah.
They've always said they didn't. Because that was why they, in order to become a saint, you had to prove all of these things.
Mm-hmm.
But this was a Catholic nun that they said it had visions, and she saw that Mother Mary had gone there, and there's no real proof of the whole story at all.
Right.
And she had other visions as where exactly where it was, and so they followed her directions, and there it's the remains of a house. You could see where the original foundation was. It came up a few,
mm-hmm.
a few feet.
Right, and then they just...
And I asked them, well, how do you know what the original house looked like? She said, well, they just modeled it after the houses that were around there.
Yeah, the architecture of the time.
Mm-hmm. And they have a painting of this nun is in that building. And they treat it like a little chapel, really. They have places where you can light the candles. It's a really very small house.
Very small.
But then people didn't have big houses back in those days anyway. But they lit the candles, and they had a wall outside where you could write a wish, wasn't it, on a
prayer
piece of paper.
Prayer, wish, uh-huh, whatever, a request.
To Mother Mary.
Right, it's a prayer wall. You can just... Yeah, right. Put it in there and put it in the wall. And then...
It goes to heaven, I guess.
I guess so.
But that also was crowded with people.
Right.
But see,
it wasn't as bad as Athens, but they were a necropolis.
But see, the thing with that story, they say, and no disrespect out there for those who are Catholics and want to believe these stories, that's okay. But they said... The Catholics don't believe that Mary ever died, that she ascended the way Jesus did. And that way there is no tomb, there she's not buried anywhere. Well, that's what they believe. But according to what we found, and it's in the back of my book, Jesus in the Essenes, a lot of the research I've done and finding all these old books that have been sent to me, is that... they all came to Glastonbury. Well, first they came to San Marie del Amaro, and I've talked about that on other shows when we were there. And then they came to Glastonbury because that was where Jesus was when he was young, too. Mm-hmm. And that was the home of the Druids, and so they had people there who would take care of them. And that was the first church in England, the first church in the modern, in that, not the modern, the ancient world at that time, was there at Glastonbury. Mm-hmm. The second one was in France that Mary Magdalene began. And the third one was in Spain. It was started by Lazarus. And all this has been proven. The Catholic Church had arguments for years on where was the first church, and they knew it wasn't in Rome. Rome didn't come along to about 300 or 400 years after the first one. And they knew it had to be Glastonbury or the one in France, but they just weren't sure which was first. And they finally agreed it was Glastonbury. Now, they don't tell people this, but when you're there, you hear the stories. And they call the, I think it's the Abbey there. We went in the Abbey when we were there last year.
Oh, Glastonbury, yes. Mm-hmm.
They call that the holiest place in the world because they said the remaining disciples were all buried there and also Mother Mary. And according to the story in Turkey, John brought her there. I don't know if he stayed or what. Mm-hmm. But I don't know. What we have had a lot more proof to it, that he did die in Glastonbury with all the other disciples.
She did or he did?
Both of them.
Okay.
And they were buried there. I found one book that gave carvings on the wall to show that where she was supposed to be buried. So here we got conflicting stories. Who's to say? But the church doesn't want to believe that she died at all.
Well, then that way she's a saint.
Oh. And there would never be a tomb. Mm-hmm. Maybe they didn't want there to be a tomb to go and, the same way they didn't have anything for Jesus.
Right.
So that's the story we have of what really happened to Mother Mary. And we know Mary Magdalene did a lot of work in the south of France. So they said they were the ones that founded the church there. And when we were at San Marie del Mar, at the where they have the church where they came ashore in their ship, they had in their little brochure, and this is a Catholic church, and they said, it must be remembered that the Christian church was begun by women. And I think that's a very important statement.
Right.
That the way they say now, you know, women can't become priests because he didn't have any women disciples. We know none of that is true. But remember them to say that, so it shows they're not letting people know a lot of things. You'd have to go these places and see these little things. But anyway, it was interesting in Ephesus to see that part. But then we were driven around of the Ephesus, and we were taken to a school.
Right. We might explain a little bit more about what Ephesus was. It was a city.
Yeah.
It was in ruins.
Ancient
city.
Yeah, I didn't go through that part. I went on the bus. I didn't want to walk through that. It was an ancient city.
Right.
Dating back to the time that Mary could have been there.
Right.
Uh-huh. Tell them about
very
that.
Old. But it was really impressive. Some of the parts that they had uncovered, it was similar to Pompeii and how they had uncovered so much. Even some areas they knew that they were nice boutique shops because they had the mosaic tiles, and they said that's only where you have wealthy people and wealthy, you know, like businesses and things like that. And they just kept comparing it to, you know, so we could maybe understand it to our little boutique malls, and then, okay, over here's the library, and over here's the you could tell the hospital and the pharmacy. They had their symbols out on the front, which buildings were for that. And then they also knew the hospital because they found surgical instruments in there. You know,
was this buried by a volcano, too, or did they say?
I don't remember.
But they say it's one of the best preserved cities and ancient cities.
Right, and they've been reconstructing it. It's just very slow reconstructing it. A long, long time they've been trying to do it. Back in the 70s, an American company went in and did the most work on the library. So that has a lot done to it. But for the most part, it's just very, very slow progress that they make. And but you could see the houses. I mean, they're public, I guess it was a spa, and it was like the restroom and the whole system. I mean, it's all these toilets that were in a line. And
they were regular urinals.
Yes, absolutely. Okay. And they had water running under it, that, you know, where it was just very sanitary, you know. They had water systems. They had
everything. You know, when I wrote Jesus and the Essenes and we did a research on Qumran, they had urinals, and people said they couldn't have.
Right.
This proved that they did have them in those days.
Absolutely.
Okay, is somebody there? Hello?
Yeah, hi. This is Janine. How are you?
Fine. We're finally home for a little while.
How are you, Janine?
Well, I'm calling to give you all my love to both you and your daughter, Julia, and to give you as much positive energy as I can give you, because I think the work that you're doing is tremendous. It's very much needed, and unfortunately, I came into this call a little late because I got confused with Central and Eastern Standard Time, but I just wanted to say I saw one of the conferences, YouTube, Dolores, that you did.
Yeah.
And I have to say I was very much taken with what you were saying about the first, second, third waves, the ETs, and different things. And I've had a lot of strange things happen to me over my lifetime. But I have ordered your books, and I'm so looking forward to reading them because everything you talked about certainly rang true. And I was just wondering, with the first wave, because I believe I'm the first wave,
okay.
Is there anything in particular that in your sessions, things that we can do to advance our purpose here? I know it's being here and just being here is what we're supposed to do, but I tend to think along with some of your callers. And I've listened to some of your archives that, you know, there's got to be more we can do.
You want to answer that?
Yeah, all I'm hearing, what I was hearing as you were saying that is they were saying breathe. And it's like just the B part again. When you do that, when you are at home with yourself, that puts all this energy out to everybody else, and that's what helps them, to bring them up. That's what you're doing. That's what you're here. I mean, just putting out all your positiveness and all of that wonderful energy, and then that affects everyone around you and has a ripple effect that keeps going and going and going. How better can you help? I mean, what's better than that?
Because they've said you don't have to do anything, you just have to be.
I know you're saying, well, surely there's something more, but it really isn't. Just keep being the best you, and that, you know, you're always working on you. Well, then that's an example for everyone around you, and at the same time, it's all those wonderful energies are rippling out. So that's what we're here for. That's what, you know, and then as the waves, they're setting examples. And showing everybody else how to do that.
And they're generating positive energy.
Mm-hmm.
So you're like a model, example.
Right.
And it may not seem like you're doing anything, but you really are.
Absolutely.
Actually, to be honest with you, I do feel like I've done that. And most of my life, I felt like I've been here for others, not mm-hmm. necessarily for myself. But can I ask one more question?
Yeah, I think we have another caller, too, but very quickly.
Okay. Dolores, you talked about the frequencies, and I've experienced a lot of changes in frequencies. And I was just wondering if you know of any more major ones that will be coming.
Well, we had two big ones in June, right before mm-hmm. we started on this. I don't know if we've heard. They just told us they become more frequent.
Oh, they're constant. They're constant. So
they're speeding up, I think.
Okay. Okay. Well, wonderful speaking with both of you. And like I said, I send all my love and blessings, whatever I have. I praise you for what you're doing. And please keep up the good work. And thank you very much. And bye for now.
Well, thank you so much, Jeannie. That's wonderful.
Okay. Okay, I think there was another caller there, too, wasn't there? Hello, is somebody else there?
Oh, okay.
Oh, they hung up. Okay. Have we got a little more time, don't we?
Just a few minutes.
Oh, okay. But anyway, we were all over the Mediterranean. We uh-huh. went to all of these Greek isles. And the one I was most fascinated with was Rhodes, because I've always heard of the Colossus of Rhodes. In ancient times, it was one of the seven wonders of the world. It was supposed to be a huge statue. And we found out while we were over there, it was almost as big as the Statue of Liberty.
Right.
And it was supposed to have stood to where it was astride the harbor, and the ships would go between the statue's legs to get into Rhodes. And that's where they were doing all this excavating and finding these parts. It's a huge wall. It goes all the way around the old part.
Right. It's a beautiful city. It was a very nice island. That place is very nice.
Now here again, I kept thinking, how could they build something as big as the Statue of Liberty in
out
those
of bronze.
Days?
It was out of bronze.
Bronze, yeah, which was extremely heavy.
Mm-hmm.
It was an earthquake that destroyed it.
Mm-hmm.
And they said when it fell, it destroyed a bunch of houses when it fell on it. And they were going to rebuild it, but it was the Oracle of Delphi who said no, because they had offended the sun god. That was supposed to represent the sun god.
Mm-hmm.
And so it laid there on the ground for 800 years. But even then, it was considered a marvel of the ancient world.
Yeah.
Till finally some Arabs bought it and took 900 camels to carry all the bronze away. There's quite a story there, too.
Right.
Okay, I think we're coming down to the wire here. But that's one thing I like when we're doing these things. I want to explore. I want to know the history and where all these things came from. How they could build something like that. Well, they said there's some Americans that are planning to rebuild a replica of it. We'll see what takes to get them to do it.
Right. Big cranes.
Huge cranes, probably. They said the Statue of Liberty was modeled after that one.
Yeah, you can see it on the pictures, how it was. It had a lot of similarities.
Because they had the rays shooting out of the head.
Right.
The
and
same way.
And then holding the light.
Yeah, and he was holding a light,
uh-huh.
which was like a lighthouse from the harbor. So anyway, the world gets smaller and smaller, and we're finding out more and more of it as we travel.
Right. But that is a gorgeous area to cruise on. All the islands, it is just wonderful, wonderful things to see there.
So if you ever want to take that cruise, it leaves out of Rome,
mm-hmm.
and this was an 11-day cruise. And we had lectures and workshops on the cruise,
right.
so we were working at the same time.
Mm-hmm.
And now we are 2013, we are penciling in. Don't have all the exact dates yet, but we've got a lot of other countries to go to
next
year.
Well, just stay posted, because as we're working on them, getting them started. So as we finalize the details, then I post them. So
it'll be on our website.
Right.
So next week we're having our class here in Arkansas again, and it's going to be over 100 people again.
Right. We're getting close to being full. I think we only have about 10 spots left.
So these classes are getting to be the biggest in the United States now, so they're huge. But we're training a lot of people, and it's good.
Yes, very good.
Okay, I think it's coming up now the time for us to sign off. And this is a live show until the 9th of November, after we do our classes. And after that, I'll head out to China. China, Beijing, Shanghai, Taiwan. Then I'll be doing a seminar with Doreen Virtue in Honolulu. And I'll be back home the beginning of December. So we'll be keeping you posted on those things, too. Everything is on our website. Anyway, this whole year is sure flown by. So we'll thank everybody for listening tonight. And everybody stay safe. And the year's almost over.
That's right.
So good night, everyone.
Make it great.